from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday afternoon, the Department of Justice sent a strong message earlier today to government officials who are restricting religious freedom, stating in a document filed in federal court in the state of Mississippi, quote, individual rights secured by the Constitution do not disappear during a public health crisis, end quote. We'll have more on this breaking story later in the program with Eric Dreiben, Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. And speaking of religious freedom and the courts, federal judge Justin Walker underscored the importance of federal judges who follow the Constitution this past Saturday when he issued a temporary restraining order against the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky. Mayor Greg Fisher had issued an order that churches could not have drive-in services on Easter Sunday. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who is the senior senator from the state of Kentucky, not only appealed to the Louisville mayor to back off, he's also the one largely responsible for the remarkable turnaround that's happening on the federal courts. Leader Mitch McConnell joins me in just a moment. We'll also get the latest on Senator Schumer and Speaker Nancy Pelosi blocking additional funding for the Paycheck Protection Program. Also, 2 weeks ago, Franklin Graham, president and CEO of Samaritan's Purse, joined us here on Washington Watch as they set up a mobile hospital in New York City's Central Park to help with the flood of COVID-19 patients. New York has had over 200,000 cases with nearly 11,000 deaths from the virus. The city can use all the help it can get, but some New York officials are more focused on advancing their selfish agenda than allowing others to care for the sick. Franklin Graham is here to explain. And the spread of the coronavirus has many states moving to mail-in ballots. How might this change election dynamics, and what are the hidden dangers with mail-in elections? Adam Resler, Vice President of Ragner Research Partners, is here to explain. And finally, today is the day. General Jerry Boykin's latest book, Man to Man, which is the essence of our Stand Courageous Men's conferences, hits bookshelves today at a store near you. But I invite you to enter a free drawing for the book, Man to Man. Text the word man to 51555. That's man to 51555. We will accept your text messages until midnight tonight, Eastern Time. On tomorrow's program, we'll announce the five winners. I'll give away five books. Again, text MAN to 51555 to enter for a free drawing for General Boykin's brand-new book, Man to Man, and he'll be here later to tell us all about it. All right, the unforeseen flare-up over religious freedom in the wake of the coronavirus has once again underscored the importance of the federal courts. As I mentioned at the top of the program, last week, Greg Fisher, mayor of Louisville, Kentucky, issued an order banning drive-in services at churches. These are where people would stay in their car and listen to the message on their radios. Well, on Saturday, U.S. District Court Judge Justin Walker granted a temporary restraining order blocking the mayor from stopping the services. Joining me now to talk about the importance of originalist judges on our federal courts is the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, glad to be with you.
Well, I'm certain that you're relieved that in your home state of Kentucky, the issue of parishioners going to their churches for drive-in services that were in compliance with federal guidelines were allowed to go forward despite the efforts of the Louisville mayor.
I certainly was. I had weighed in on that. And also, by the way, these drive-in services that this particular minister had arranged were CDC compliant. In other words, it met the CDC guidelines. No question about that. So the mayor clearly overreached. I wrote a letter telling him I thought he was wrong. A law firm filed a lawsuit, and Judge Justin Walker, who coincidentally is also currently the nominee by the President of the United States for the D.C. Circuit, the second most important court in the land, issued, as you pointed out, a temporary restraining order. They had a hearing today. My assumption is that the restraining order was probably made permanent, but it was a great victory for religious freedom and certainly underscores, as you pointed out, the significance of the courts. I'm particularly proud of what we've done the first 3 years of this administration. Two Supreme Court justices, 51 U.S. Circuit Court judges. To put that in context, Barack Obama did 55 circuit judges in 8 years. This Senate and this president have done 51 in a little over 3, and we intend to do more before the end of the year.
When you throw in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims and international trade, right around 200 judges have been placed onto the bench at all levels. Quite a significant accomplishment. But it's the quality, not the quantity, that matters when we're talking about issues such as religious freedom. And just I read the opinion of Judge Walker in Kentucky, and he begins with a history lesson of religious freedom in this country, going all the way back to the pilgrims who came to this country, quoting Governor Bradford, on down to present day, even in the latest cases of the what he described some of the state-sponsored bigotry that we saw with recent cases with let me just quote from this, where he said, it was not long ago, for example, that the government told the Supreme Court it can prohibit a church from choosing its own minister, force religious business owners to buy pharmaceuticals they considered abortion-inducing, and conscript nuns to provide birth control. I mean, he didn't really miss anything in this opinion.
Yeah, it was an outstanding opinion. It shows you how brilliant he is. And it also underscores the point you made. It's not just how many judges you appoint, but what are they like? And the Trump administration, in league with the Senate Republican majority, have put young men and women on the courts who believe in the quaint notion that maybe the job of a judge is to follow the law. That's what Justice Scalia retaught lawyers all across America. That evolved into the Federalist Society, a group of individuals, lawyers, law students, who believe in this quaint notion, it shouldn't be quaint at all, that the job of a judge is to follow the law. And Justice Scalia used to say, you're not a very good judge if occasionally you're not actually unhappy with the outcome you reach because it's not your independent judgment. So I thought Judge Walker sort of demonstrated his brilliance and certainly underscored, Tony, why he's going to make a great member of the D.C. Circuit Court.
Well, I want to ask you about your letter, because your letter to the mayor of Louisville was also very poignant and forceful in making the point of religious freedom. But before I move to that, explain to our listeners why the D.C. courts, why this court is so important that Judge Walker has been nominated for.
Well, there are 11 circuits around the country. The D.C. Circuit ends up having a lot of special jurisdiction because a lot of administrative cases come first to the D.C. Circuit because of its location in the nation's capital. All the circuit judges are important, and it's important for your listeners to know that most litigation never makes it to the Supreme Court. Most complex litigation stops at the circuit court level. The level below that is district courts. They're also important, but their decisions are, of course, appealable to the circuit courts, and very, very few cases make it all the way to the Supreme Court. So that's why I have put in scheduling, which is my responsibility as majority leader, we do circuit judges first because they are the most important. And the quality, as you pointed out, is just as important as the quantity. And wonderfully enough, in 3.5 years, we've had both quantity and quality. And I'm really proud of what we've done. These are lifetime appointments of young men and women who revere the Constitution. And Justin Walker is a perfect example of that. And the opinion handed down this weekend certainly underscores the importance of these kinds of men and women on the courts.
Now, I was looking for it, and I couldn't put my fingers on it, but recently, well, within the last few months, you made a speech on the Senate floor regarding religious freedom. And, of course, all of those points made very strongly in your letter to the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky, your home state. But there is a growing divide, I should say, between the two major political parties on a number of issues. At the top, I would say the sanctity of human life. But I would say right there with it is an understanding of this fundamental first freedom of religion. And that's why these courts have become so important.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And the Democrats are angry about all this. And as a result of that, Tony, very few of these judges enjoy any Democratic support at all. They're almost all party line votes, which shows you where the Democrats are these days. They've gone hard left on so many different issues. And religious freedom is, of course, an example of it.
So when we, Leader McConnell, we're coming up with an election this fall, obviously a very important election. Every election is important. But the issue of judges is going to have to be one of those issues that people consider when they decide who they're going to support.
Absolutely. I can tell you what the Democrats will do if they get the entire government. The numbers of the judges at all levels is set by statute. The Supreme Court has been 9 since 1869, but it doesn't have to be 9. It could be 15. That's a number of the Democratic presidential candidates advocated. They will, if they get the entire government, try to undo what we've done over the last 3-plus years by expanding the numbers of the Supreme Court, the circuit courts, the district courts, and filling them with people who are quite different from the ones that we've been installing, the 51 that we've been installing here in the last little over 3 years.
That would have just basically diluting the effect of a court that is now connected to the Constitution, a novel idea, but something that has taken place in the last 3.5 years. We now have judges, a majority of which we're almost there to where they're connected to the Constitution. Leader McConnell, before we run out of time, I do have to return or go to this issue I mentioned at the top of the program, and that was the issue of the Paycheck Protection Program that you were able to shepherd through originally the CARES Act. The program has been so successful, rolled out quickly, but still working amazingly. But it's almost out of money. You moved to, at the request of the president, to put more money into that. But that's being blocked by Senator Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Why is that?
Well, they want to do a plus up of other accounts that we enacted 2.5 weeks ago that aren't out of money yet. So we were trying to address only the emergency, knowing full well in this awful pandemic we'll probably have to join together to do more.
You think you're going to get it through in time?
It'll be interesting to see. They may be out of money by the end of the week, and we'll find out whether the Democrats will go along with it.
All right. Leader Mitch McConnell, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for all the outstanding work you've done as it pertains to the courts, the federal judges, and how important that is for religious freedom.
Thank you, Tony. Enjoyed being with you.
All right. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, coming up next, we'll talk with Samaritan's Purse President Franklin Graham about some people that are complaining, not eager to help, but to complain in New York City. We'll talk with him next. Don't go away. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at standcourageous.com. That's standcourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. All right, to enter a free drawing for General Jerry Boykin's new book, Man to Man, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later in the program with the general, just released today, hitting bookstores today as we speak. If you'd like to enter a drawing to receive a copy, we're going to give away five copies. Text MAN to 51555. That's 51555. Text the word MAN. We'll make a drawing and announce it tomorrow. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, 2 weeks ago, Franklin Graham, president and CEO of Samaritan's Purse, joined us as they set up a mobile hospital in New York City Central Park to help with the flood of COVID-19 patients. Now, as of, today, New York, latest statistics, New York has had over 200,000 cases with nearly 11,000 deaths from the virus. I mean, it's clear the city can use all the help it can get, but some officials are more focused on advancing their selfish agenda than allowing others to care for the sick. Here to explain is Franklin Graham himself. Franklin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, thank you for having me.
I'm shocked by this, Franklin. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm shocked that, you know, after all that Samaritan's Purse and others that support you are doing to help out New York, there are some officials that are simply trying to harass you because of your statement of faith.
They are, Tony. And there's one particular thing that they are very upset about is that we require those that work for us to sign a statement of faith. And one of the points is we believe in marriage between a man and a woman, and a biological man, a biological woman. You know, a few years ago you didn't have to say that, but you do today.
But that's biblical.
This is a hang-up for the gay lesbian activists, and so they are very powerful in New York, and they're in the pockets of the politicians, and so they have used their influence to have really the eight Democratic members of New York's congressional delegation. They have written letters to the mayor and to the Governor Cuomo demanding that we be investigated because we might not be fair and we might discriminate the people that we help. The mayor's office already investigated this and found out that that's, of course, that's just a false report. We treat everybody, Tony, no matter who they are.
Right.
Matter of fact, I would love for all the gays and lesbians in New York that got the coronavirus, give them to us, because we not only will care for them, we'll pray for them, and we'll give them the best service that we possibly can. And we don't discriminate, never have, never will. But we do consider the people that we hire. We're trying to hire people that believe the way we believe. And I want men and women who live the Christian faith to work for Samaritan's Purse. So this is a big sticking point. And we know that this fight is coming, whether this is the fight now or it's going to be something later on, where they're going to challenge and try to get through the courts where Christian organizations do not have the right to hire like-minded men and women. So I'm not sure they're going to push it that far, but if they are, we're ready to take it as far as they want to push it.
Franklin, I know most of our listeners understand this, but apparently those that are opposing you don't. It is out of that Christian faith, that biblical faith of following Jesus and all that he taught, that we love people and we reach out with compassion and care. That is the essence of who we are. And if you don't allow us to hire people of like mind that follow Jesus in the totality of his teachings, then how can we do the care and the compassion that we are known for and want to be known for?
And Tony, if you look at history, it's the church throughout history that has taken medicine to Africa.
Yes.
Even this country, look at some of the great hospitals that had Baptist or Methodist or Presbyterian or the Catholics behind them over the years. And so the church has been involved in healthcare and pioneered healthcare in many parts of our country. And so Christians today are still very much involved in healthcare because Jesus was involved in healthcare. He cared about the total person. He cared about their body, but he cared about the soul. And that's why he came. He came to shed his blood for the sins of man, to save man. He didn't come to condemn man. But when you look at the life of Jesus, he used his power as the Son of God to bring healing to human bodies so that they would put their faith and trust in him as the Son of God.
Right.
And that's what we want to do today. We want to use medicine. We want to use serving people, helping people, and do it in such a way and do it in Jesus' name so right. that they put their faith and trust in Christ.
Let me just state this, because I've traveled the world to mostly Muslim countries where I do work for the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. And these are places, many of these places, that welcome Samaritan's Purse. Samaritan's Purse is there working. Your statement of faith, very much like ours at the Family Research Council, is Jesus Christ is Savior. That does not keep you from ministering and helping Muslims. Samaritan's Purse has reached out around the world to provide care for Muslims, even though your statement of faith says we're Christians.
And we work in many Muslim countries, and we have a good relationship with Muslims. And they know as a Christian that what I believe, and I think they appreciate the fact that I'm outspoken about it, because they know where I stand. And of course, some of them will tell me where they stand, and that's okay. We right. agree to disagree, but we respect each other.
So that works, but everywhere in the world except New York City.
Well, it's not just New York City. We're seeing this in Western Europe, Tony, where the gay lesbian activists are very powerful, and they are trying to shut down free speech and freedom of religion where they can. We were in. Working in the UK, going to have a tour there this year, but they took our venues away from us.
Very quickly, we're out of time. You hear that music. Well, how many hospitals have the gay and lesbian set up there in New York City?
I don't think they have any.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Franklin, thanks so much for joining us. We pray for you. We support you. We appreciate the work that Samaritan's Purse does.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, Franklin Graham. Folks, if you're not supporting Samaritan's Purse as a means of ministering to those in need, like those that experience the tornadoes. I'm guarantee you, Samaritan's Purse is on the ground there. I should have asked Franklin about those as well. Great ministry. I support them. Our family supports them. FRC supports them. All right, coming up next, the Department of Justice jumping in, defending religious freedom in the state of Mississippi. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities." And many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
The website, TonyPerkins.com. You're listening to Washington Watch. Right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, the Department of Justice sent a strong message today to government officials who are restricting religious freedom, stating in a document filed in the federal court in the state of Mississippi this, quote, "Individual rights secured by the Constitution do not disappear during a public health crisis," end quote. Joining us now to talk more about this, Eric Dryband, Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. Eric, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me back.
Very significant step by the Department of Justice today. Explain to our listeners what took place.
Well, last week at a church in Greenville, Mississippi, the city of Greenville and its mayor dispatched police officers to issue $500 fines to worshipers who were sitting in the parking lot at the Temple Baptist Church with their car windows rolled up and listening to their pastor, Arthur Scott, who was inside the church broadcasting. And they were essentially attending a drive-in church service complying with CDC guidelines for social distancing. The church did not have a website or the ability to, you know, stream services online, and many of the church members did not have social media accounts. So nevertheless, they were fined. They then filed suit. We then, a few hours ago, just today, filed a statement of interest in support of the church in which we explained that while it is true that governments do have, in times of emergency like this, a broad authority to protect all of us through these social distancing guidelines, that it is unlawful for a local government, law enforcement, et cetera, to single out religion or religious worshipers or houses of worship. And the allegations here certainly raise serious questions about that. So we filed in support of the church.
These restrictions, if they are the least intrusive and they're justifiable, can go forward, but they have to be applied uniformly, meaning that everybody's treated the same. In this particular case, it's very clear that they were not, because you had a church where they were keeping this, as you said, CDC guidelines, staying in their cars, windows rolled up, but just down the street at a drive-up restaurant, people were sitting there in their cars, windows down, and they were able to function.
Yeah, and those are the allegations in the case. And the Attorney General, in addition to what we filed, issued a very strong statement. It's available on the Justice Department's website about this. That's exactly right, Tony. Certainly local and state governments and even the federal government have asked us to comply with these social distancing guidelines. And there are times that those guidelines do extend to religious worship. But at the same time, it is unlawful to target religious institutions, to single them out for stricter treatment or broader prohibitions than may apply to other similarly situated people and institutions. And those are the concerns that are issue in this case in Mississippi. So we felt it was important that we send a strong signal to the public, but also in support of Temple Baptist Church and Pastor Scott and the worshipers there as well.
So what happens from here? What happens next?
Well, the plaintiffs in the case, Temple Baptist Church and Pastor Scott, through their lawyers, are asking the federal judge there to issue a temporary restraining order. And the judge will consider the evidence and issue a decision. We've provided a framework in the papers we filed today that we hope the judge will follow. If the judge agrees that Temple Baptist Church and Pastor Scott have demonstrated that they should, that they should prevail, the judge can issue a series of orders, first a temporary restraining order, possibly a preliminary injunction, or even an injunctive relief that requires the city of Greenville, Mississippi, to permit this church and its worshipers and Pastor Scott to worship within the guidelines provided both by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as an executive order issued by the governor of Mississippi. Another possibility is that the state of Mississippi may decide, or the city itself may decide to settle with the church and agree to permit Temple Baptist Church to go ahead as it wishes. So there are different outcomes possible here.
Well, I just wanted, for our listeners, want to underscore that it was 2 weeks ago you were on the program before any of these types of cases broke. In fact, we were talking about how it was important for churches to comply with the CDC guidelines. But on that program, when I asked you about it, you said very clearly the Department of Justice, if any official attempts to go beyond reasonable limitations, that the Department of Justice would be watching because this administration cares deeply and understands the importance of this First Amendment freedom.
That's exactly right, Tony. And that comes directly from President Trump and Attorney General William Barr themselves. They both feel very strongly about this, as do I. And the Attorney General directed us to file papers today. And certainly I fully supported that, and we did that. And we hope the justice will prevail in the case.
Are there other cases that you're looking at right now?
There are other cases that we are looking at. There are various cases pending or being talked about, potentially being filed around the country. This is the first one that we have filed papers in, but we are looking at other cases, and it'll just have to depend on how those cases evolve. Very often, local officials, when they realize that if in fact they've overstepped, that they will amicably resolve the issue before it goes into court. But we are looking at other cases, yes.
All right. Eric Dreiben, thank you so much for joining us today, and our appreciation to you and to Attorney General William Barr for being on watch for that first freedom.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. But this is significant. In 4 years ago, we didn't have this. We actually had a government that was working against us when it came to the exercise of our religious freedom. This case, we have an administration that is aggressively defending that first freedom. All right, speaking of how that all happens, it happens through elections. More states now moving toward mail-in ballots. Are there downsides? What does it mean? What are the dynamics? We talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. As I mentioned, we're going to be giving away five of General Boykin's new books, Man to Man. It's the essence of our Stand Courageous Men's Conference. If you'd like to enter the drawing to receive one of the five copies, text the word MAN to 51555. That's 51555, and we'll accept your text messages until midnight tonight, Eastern Time. Tomorrow's program, I'll announce the five winners. And a little bit later, General Boykin's going to join us to talk all about the book. All right, election season is upon us. Primaries are taking place across the country. In fact, Wisconsin had a primary, and what's happening is many states are moving to mail-in ballots. How does this alter the election process, and are there downsides to this? Well, joining me to talk more about this and what the research actually shows is the Vice President of Ragner Research Partners, Adam Raisler. Adam, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks so much for having me today.
Well, I read your research and found it interesting. It's fascinating because it really changed the dynamics of elections. We saw, I think, about a million votes cast by mail in Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken. And this is going to be something more and more states are turning toward. What are the dynamics of this? How does this change elections?
Yeah, it's a spectacular question. And we're going to see this debate play out over the coming weeks and months as we're seeing so many different Secretary of State across the country make a very concentrated effort to shifting the way that their states engage in the electoral process. And that's by moving them to the mail style that we see in some current states like Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. And it's in a new attempt, especially by many Democratic Secretary of States, to really fundamentally change our voting process. You know, they started it with a nationwide kind of launch of having a no reason absentee style. And this is now just their next step in the electoral evolution, change the way that we engage in our democratic process. And we're going to have to really start to dive into and assess the safety and security of this and making sure that all Americans have access to ballots and can vote.
Now, having been held public office, having been involved in a number of campaigns, you basically build your strategy around Election Day. This fundamentally changes the way that is done because these mail-in ballots go out, in some cases, 45 days before an election. And what does your research show in terms of when people submit these ballots, meaning when do they make their decisions on who they're going to support?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like you just said, Tony, that's a perfect point. You know, we did a study that looked at the impact of voting by mail, where we focused on those three states of Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. And we found that in these states, 25% of the ballots are decided and returned 2 weeks before the election day in November. Moving the timeline, is shifting that timeline into a much earlier territory. And the other thing that we also found is that for the absentee ballots, they are decided and sent back up to 5 weeks prior to election day in November. So your typical timeline and late night push that campaigns are structured around and used to operating under aren't really going to work this time because they're not even going to reach at least 30 to 35% of the electorate will have already voted by that point. And it's a staggering number to see of how many votes could be casted so early in the process. And so campaigns are really going to have to fundamentally alter their behavior patterns and their strategies and timelines to really start that sustained voter contact in a much earlier time period than they are normally accustomed to. And forcing them to do that is really going to put a greater strain on their financial resources for them to be able to carry out that prolonged period of a sustained voter outreach and ballot tracking.
So that means people are going to see much more political ads because it's going to be a sustained time period for trying to convince people to vote a particular way. Adam Raisler, let me ask you this question. What impact, if any, does this have on voter participation? What do we see in terms of, does this increase the number of people who are voting as opposed to people having to show up at the poll and cast their vote?
It does. You know, if you look back at the 2016 election, we saw a national turnout of roughly 60.1%. In the states that vote by mail, we saw a minimum of a 5% higher turnout. So in Oregon, we saw a turnout of 68%. In Washington, a turnout of 65.7%, nearly 66% turnout. So you definitely do see a higher turnout as a result of the style where you're voting exclusively by mail.
So what do we know, Adam, about voter fraud, ballot security issues?
So, you know, I kind of want to just start that with, you know, you can create the most airtight system in the world for voting exclusively by mail. But, you know, it leads me to still suspect that we're going to still see the dead finding a way to vote in areas like Cook County, Illinois. There's always going to be fraud in elections, whether you're voting by mail or you are voting in person. But the challenge is that voting by mail is going to allow those ballots to be transferred and handled by so many more third parties than they are in a polling place. You know, saying when you go to vote in your polling place, you're handed that ballot, you go and you fill that out in the privacy of the polling booth. You then return the ballot and feed it back into the machine for it to be counted. And it only transfers hands between the poll volunteer and the voter. When this is all being done by mail, these ballots are going to be transferred through so many different points of contact and touch points by the county clerk's office, the post office, the voter, those assisting the voter. It opens up so many more new opportunities where fraud can take place. And it's just these are measures that these states are really going to have to work in coordination to identify all of these opportunities for missteps and fraud and do their absolute best to mitigate those. But we're still going to see some staggering effects and impacts coming from this based on those numerous touch points. You know, let me give you an example. In a political article, we saw them talk about the most recent elections and voting by mail and kind of the legal nightmare that can become. And in it, they cited that 27% of absentee ballots were rejected across the country and were disqualified for various different reasons. And in some states, like the epic battleground state of Florida, that was even higher, with at least a third of the ballots being rejected. Another reason we saw in one state was problems with the voters' signatures. Others can be that the ballots aren't mailed back in enough time and they don't reach the clerk's office by the deadline. There's just so many opportunities for fraud and missteps to take place here.
Wow. It's going to be interesting as more and more states move that direction in the wake of the coronavirus. Adam Raisler, thanks so much for joining us. We want to continue to look at this as we move closer and closer to the fall's election. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for all you do, Tony.
Thank you, Adam. Adam Raisler. To find out more about their working, actually look at their research that they've done, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and you can follow the links over. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, today is the day. For those of you just joining me, you would say, what is today? Well, today is the day that the book Man to Man hits bookstores across America. General Jerry Boykin's new book, Man to Man, which is really the core of our Stand Courageous Men's Conference. It covers five aspects of what it means to be a biblical man: the provider, a battle buddy, the instructor, the defender, and the chaplain. And if you'd like to get or participate in a drawing to receive a free copy, we're going to give away five copies of the book, one for each of the five roles. Text MAN to 51555. And we're going to have that drawing before midnight tonight, Eastern Time, and I will let you know tomorrow. But here to tell us all about this new book, Man to Man, is the man himself, the General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Tony. It's good to be with you. I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. This social distancing, it's a challenge. But let's talk about this book. This is the core of the Stand Courageous Men's Conference that we've been doing for the last the last 8-9 months. So tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, well, the book itself is a message that I've had in my heart for over a decade, and I've actually been speaking on this at men's conferences for probably that long, but my publisher asked me to do another book, and I said there's only one book that I really have any interest in, and it is this book that was released today, and as you said, we structured our conferences around this, and it talks about how, you know, there are five biblical roles for man, and the man is the provider, but he provides more than just financially. He provides direction, he provides identity, and a variety of things. And an instructor, which means he's got to know what's happening in the world. He's got to be able to explain to his family as well as the people around him what's going on, and also he's got to know the Bible. You know, he's got to know the Bible so that he can put it in a proper biblical context or develop a biblical worldview. As the instructor, and then as the defender, you know, we defend what we hold dear. It's you and I took an oath to the Constitution of the United States. But there are many other ways that a man can be a godly man and defend what he holds dear, you know, and especially when you look at the issue of abortion. Mm-hmm. And especially this egregious notion that you can kill a baby after it's born alive. And then a man is a battle buddy. And, you know, every man, as Proverbs says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man strengtheneth another or sharpens another, depending on the translation that you get. And that means that every one of us, every man needs a battle buddy and needs to be a battle buddy. You need a man that you have an intimate relationship with, that you can share your concerns and your fears, and he can share his with you, and you've got his back, and he's got your back. It's a long-time military concept, but it applies in the world we live in the spiritual world, because it is, you know, we're in a spiritual battle every day, even if we're not on a physical warfare battlefield. And then finally, and you do this so well, as you speak at our men's conferences, the man is a chaplain, and it's a chaplain in his home, but it's also a chaplain in his community, in his church. You know, a man has to know the Word of God. In order to be an instructor, in order to be the chaplain, the man has to know the Word of God. That's why this Bible reading that you put us on, and that we're now pushing out to the men that attend our conferences, are doing this two-year Bible study. Read through the Bible in 2 years. And I must tell you, this is so appropriate for what I'm trying to say in this book, is that a man's got to know the Word of God. You ought to be reading every day. And if you say, I'm just not going to get a Bible on tape, if you have to, and put it on, you know, in your car and listen to it as you drive to work. But you've got to be hearing the Word of God. Faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the Word. And that, you know, if you're not reading it, then you need to be hearing it. But I'm hoping that this book is going to really touch a lot of lives. And I've already gotten a lot of feedback on it. In fact, I talked to the producer of a very well-known program today, and she read through this thing. And when I say she is the producer. So let me say this, that one of the unique things about the book, Tony, is that we structured this book in such a way that men can now take this book and sit down and do a men's small group, a men's study group, a men's get-together. And Dr. Keenan Cureton, who is our vice president for Christian Resources, wrote the very last part of the book. He wrote it in such a way that it gives men instructions on how they can take these five chapters and they can go through and do a men's study. And then one of our contract employees, Leela Gilbert, a wonderful lady who is a extraordinary author. She helped me with the book, and she put at the end of every chapter, we not only put in there study questions for men to ponder and to ask in their small group, but she put notes to the women in there. So there is something in this book for the women. And once they read through what we're telling the men, then there's something in the end of every chapter for the women. So I think it's going to be very helpful to men who really want to get on the right track or enhance their Christian walk as a man of God.
Well, General, 30 seconds, we're almost out of time, but is there a correlation between the attack on masculinity today and the importance of biblical manhood in today's culture?
Absolutely. Families are falling apart today because men are not stepping up and being what God has ordained them to be.
What the enemy is attacking is a good indication of what we should defend and what we
Absolutely.
Should promote. General
well
Jerry
said.
Boykin, thanks so much for joining us. Great book. Thank you for your leadership and for reaching out to men all across the country.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks, I encourage you to get a copy of the book. It's on shelves today. If you'd like to get a copy, text me, 51555, the book, to the word man. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.